Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
Oh, I'm Richard.
And I'm Ashley.
That's my favorite part about when we record with you guys is we get to you and you're like, wait, which one of us is going first?
Somebody say something quick.
It's fine. I can cut out the gap.
It's great.
Yeah. So this is our podcast about anything and everything off-road. I would say tonight, but it's tonight for you guys. It's early afternoon for me and Ross. Yeah. As always, we are socially distant. It's literally the only way we can do the show. I'm in the Midwest, Ross is in the Northeast, and Richard and Ashley are in Spain.
Correct. Northern Spain.
Yeah. Normally, this is a very international show with you guys, but normally you're just up in Canada. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not.
Yeah, we're finally able to travel again, so we're making good
use.
Canada is hardly international compared to what you guys have done over the last, since we spoke last.
So, that's fair.
Yeah, looking forward to getting into that.
So, Ross, I don't think we need to do your update yet because talked about it last night.
I'll say the phrase that came to mind after driving the car today, the Nissan Altima press car. Altima.
That was a bad.
I made myself laugh so hard going to drop my daughter off at daycare this morning when I said that out loud, and I can just see her in the mirror looking at me like, the fuck is this guy talking about?
Oh, you just reminded me of, I have to go back and find this Instagram reel of this dad who decides to use their golf cart to drop their kid off at school instead of getting in their actual vehicle. And by the time he's back at the house, she's like, there's already comments on the Facebook page. Who's this guy cut the line? And I was like, he solved the system. He cut the line. Like, why are you mad about it? You're just mad because you didn't think of it. Like,
cracked the code, except if I tried to crack that code here, I would get arrested.
Well, if you drove an Altima on the sidewalk, yeah, that would definitely be bad.
I meant more like the you know, city here is not friendly to golf carts the way some of those cities. What is that town? Is it like Tennessee or Georgia where – like 90-something% of the people just do their daily everything in golf carts?
I would say pick a town, and or like you could probably pick a state and find a community per state. Yeah. Florida's definitely high on the list for
sure. Look for the golf. Look for the old white people. Yeah.
Yes.
So, Chris, do you have any updates since we recorded?
No. I have not had to attend a youth sporting event, but that's because none of them have happened yet. I'm pretty sure my oldest is at football practice right now. But he drives himself now, and so I don't have to go to those. The only other thing is we kind of started talking about tires last night on the last show, and we have definitely kept talking about tires for it. So hey. I still need to email Roger about the wear that we've been seeing. Mm-hmm. I put 46,000 miles on a set of tires and
on two over the Vredestein pins.
Right. Two of them are the full 46,000.
46. Two of them have, what do we say?
38 or something. 38. Yeah. It's pretty high up there. But in all of that, it's been a lot. And so we're going to make some adjustments. We're talking to some people. Hopefully that'll go well.
I told you I was going to hit the ground running with emails this morning, and I...
Yeah, you did. I was like, through. Ross, I'm not ready for extra emails. It's work time. What are you doing?
In the wee hours before people actually start doing work, it's easy to shoot off an email to an old friend. So, yeah, we'll see how that pans out.
And we found out he got promoted, so...
Motorsports. From PR to Motorsports. What a gig.
It's like, we all would like that change.
Right?
So that's my only update. So we're back to welcoming Richard and Ashley back to the show again.
Thank you for having us.
Either we're actually, show number we're actually, four or no, five I, with maybe. You guys. Yeah.
Time flies.
I thought I put it in as three, but I could be wrong.
Let's go with three.
Unless it's YouTube lies. Yeah, we'll go with a number that's more than two and less than six.
We definitely know it's more than two. We've established that. Because there was a cabin in like Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
Where there was like a raven outside the entire time, like squawking at us.
And one of the trucks was one of the trucks was still in Colorado, but you were in Calgary at that point.
Yeah.
There was an Airbnb tiny house. There was I remember that.
It was a Best Western hotel when Air Canada lost their luggage.
Yes.
And was there one in the other Airbnb in Calgary?
I don't remember, but
we were just bouncing.
This is the closest thing to being in our own home that we've ever done on the podcast.
Yeah.
So,
because you're in the truck.
Yeah. This is stage for the audio listener. Richard and Ashley are sitting in what from here doesn't look like much, but why don't you tell us where you're sitting and what you're sitting in?
Yeah. So we are in we have a truck and camper. We have our Toyota Tundra, 2008 Toyota Tundra, and a Overland Explorer Vehicles Alpine flatbed camper. And we are in Spain, currently traveling through Europe in it.
Ooh.
Yeah, we have a general idea where we're heading next, which would be south. But then eventually, probably
north. But north, then, maybe and then east.
East. So.
And possibly at some point west.
Exactly. So
let's get all the directions.
Yeah, there we go. Good thing I posted updates.
Yeah, so thank you.
You can see, 2008 Toyota Tundra with a MITS alloy flatbed. And then, the Overland Explorer Vehicles Alpine Camper. And we've had this set up for a year now, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe spent eight months in it in between jobs where we've had to fly away. But yeah, I think it's been shipping.
So we shipped it from Galveston, Texas, because it was closer to drive to Texas than it was to drive to Halifax from where we were in Calgary, which is mind blowing.
We talked about
Canada's a big place.
Yeah, sure, we talked about that on a prior show. The confines of the vehicle you were looking for is that it had to fit in the container.
Yeah, we skipped that. and then eventually just shipped it roll on, roll off.
Did the Tundra sustain any damage in the moving process? None.
It was great. Super easy.
Very easy.
Out of Texas and into Southampton, England.
Hmm.
We did that March this year.
Yeah.
Yes. And then we spent, the truck was in the United Kingdom for 6 months. So we had a full 6 month temporary import permit, which we ourselves spent 4 months in England and Scotland. 2 months in between or some in the middle of there, we flew down for an expedition overland trip in Africa. So we went to South Africa, Botswana, and Namibia for work to film and photograph, and actually planned the entire thing and navigated for that trip.
Right. So I didn't plan the entire thing.
You were involved in much of the planning.
Yeah,
exactly.
And the navigation.
Yeah. And then 2 weeks ago, we, flew back to Scotland, picked up the truck.
So beginning of September.
Yep. Drove south to the bottom of England and shipped from Plymouth to Santander in Spain.
On a ferry.
On a ferry.
An overnight ferry.
And then we've been here for a couple weeks in Spain.
Wow. So you've spent more time in the Eastern Hemisphere than the Western.
Correct.
At least over the last 6 months, if not a whole year. That's
So when you're talking about sending emails before anybody else is up or working, we do that all the time now.
It's great.
We're like, how do you like all these emails at 3 a.m.?
You have a new relationship with time over there.
Well, all of our communications were normal hours. Like, we were good.
Yeah, it's great. And it's nice that there's an overlap, nice amount of overlap between North America and us. So it works out.
Well, that's our Hooniverse coworker is down in Australia. So he's always a day ahead minus 7 hours. And so his communications are hilarious because normally when we record with him, we're recording at like I'm recording 8 p.m. my time. He's a whole day ahead at like his lunch break is when he's hanging out with us. So we're used to that. And my wife works in international logistics. So about 10 p.m. here means all of Asia is now awake and starting to pummel her with email. So our phones ding at night. So we're good. We're good.
Yeah. Perfect.
So
I'm a big fan of the focus setting on the iPhone.
Yes. Sleep matters.
Yeah. International time stuff too. What time is it where this person is? I probably shouldn't call them now. Or fuck them. I'm going to call them anyways.
Who do you want to talk to that much?
Currently nobody.
So I'm curious because like we always think about North America being like so open, and that's normally what you hear about like Europeans coming this way to explore the American West. Like, have you guys run into any issues in the UK and Scotland versus like things being more compact, or how does that work for you?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like smaller area, more people. It's not as easy to just go out to BLM land and camp. That's not really a thing. In Spain, I think they're pretty tight with specific parking areas for motorhomes only. And you can't look like you're camping. You have to look like you're just parked. So I don't know that this camper would work.
Yeah. And we're talking about that's for free camping.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. Like in a big kind of lot. But we've been managing pretty well. I think
when we
England
first
was the hardest.
Yeah, when we first got to England, driving on the left-hand side of the road in a full-size truck.
Left-hand drive, full-size truck.
Yeah. It's not a big deal because there are Sprinter vans everywhere, and every Sprinter is the same width as the tire.
Okay.
And we never got into a situation where we're like, well, we can't fit. I'm sure if we tried to, in some areas in the south in Cornwall, we've heard it's really tight, but... Yeah. It was all good, but it was stressful to drive there.
Yeah, I think so. The roads are narrow, and all these winding roads have a speed limit of 60 miles an hour, where they would be like 30 miles an hour back home.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So I'm mostly trying to go fast enough so that I can either not annoy the people behind me or find a spot to pull over in time so that I don't have a big pile of people behind me.
But they do have pullouts, like pullout areas where you can pull over. And people are actually like really nice.
I never got honked at once.
Really?
Yeah, so, nobody was raging and angry. Everybody's like,
yeah, everybody hits the hazards as a thank you.
You know?
When they pass.
It's like that's like the mountains like in the San Francisco area, up in the hills there between the bay and the ocean. There's pullouts and people are generally like, "Oh, this person is moving faster than me," or "This person's a local. They know this road." And can you know, drive a Honda Fit at twice the speed of me in a rental Camaro. So you didn't have any of those Top Gear like induced comedy moments where you're like, very big truck, very small civilization here, like I'm about to take out a 1400s house. None of those.
No, it was pretty good. And I think I don't remember if I said this last time, but our friend Dan from Malamish on Instagram, they've got a like 4x4 Sprinter that they drive everywhere, and they spend a lot of time in the UK and
in Europe
Europe. And the way that he explained it was, he's like, beer gets delivered in Sprinter vans, and if I'm going somewhere where they don't deliver beer, I don't want to actually go there. So
that is certainly a great way, an interesting way to look at it.
I don't think there were too many places where we decided not to go because the truck size was too big or anything. But
I feel like green laning, though, we had opted out of. That's like specific kind of off-road pursuit in the UK where you can go on trails that are mud or dirt or whatever.
Narrow two tracks.
Yeah, but we didn't know if we'd be too wide, and we just kind of didn't do it. But you can.
They're mostly built around series Land Rovers or Defenders.
Okay.
So... you know,
okay.
The farmer's going to build it, build his rock wall just wide enough so his defender can go through there. Right. And at that point, that's the limit.
Yep. No easy way to create no trespassing.
Exactly. Mm.
So this sounds like the opposite issue, or not issue, but opposite experience from the trip that the two of you attended with the Overland crew. Especially Iceland, where it's just vast and open. So you've been pinballing all over that area.
Yeah.
So how does your current adventure tie into that or not?
I think that, like, so first of all, Spain has been a lot more wide open than I expected it to be.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is that the terrain and the scenery changes a lot in a very short time period.
Yeah.
So you don't have to drive very far for things to be very different. Whereas when we were in like South Africa, Namibia, Botswana, the distances were much further that we did. And the roads were a lot wider. And the camping was a lot different there, actually. You know, I think there was, it was a little more flexible. Or if you did want to stay at a campground, there were really, you know, nice ones, but there were also really simple ones. And those were the ones I liked the best, when they just had a flush toilet in the middle of nowhere, which I still am amazed by. Yeah.
Really?
And just, like a donkey boiler.
We just don't know where it flushes to.
I know. That's the thing. You're like, where does that go to?
Underground.
Like a septic field-ish. Or a pit.
Yeah.
I guess we could ask. But yeah, anyways. And like relatively inexpensive. Or quite inexpensive, some of them.
Yeah.
And it's just like a little toilet flush and a donkey boiler shower.
Yeah.
Which you can explain.
Yeah. So
what that is.
And
if you want.
Words I've never heard before.
Yeah. So, so the neat thing was, like, the campsites were pretty big. So they're mostly like what I guess we would call like a group campsite back home. And each campsite had a specific bathroom, like a toilet to itself for the camp. And then
a
donkey boiler as well. And the donkey boiler was essentially a big 45-gallon drum that had had water piped in and water piped out that you could build a fire underneath and heat it up and have hot water that you made yourself with the fire that was heating this drum of
And then the showers water. Were all open air. So you'd just be like looking out and sunset and your gin and tonic on the ledge and washing your hair, or stars are out.
It was serious work, it sounds like.
It sounds perfect.
That's an experience. Yeah, that's an experience.
Yeah, and there were times where, what was it, we went 800 kilometers between fuel stops because we were just out so far on that one track in northern Namibia. And
what is that in?
Yeah, so it was a big change, which was very welcome after being in Scotland for so long. It was just nice.
It was just different, yeah.
Nice to see
it. It was a different challenge. So,
are you doing math, Ross?
That's 500 miles.
Say it's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm under doing math.
Between fuel Google stops. Is doing math. And I would say maybe a quarter of that was low range.
Oh,
so,
what?
So yeah. All so, dirt, quarter of that low range, with a Sequoia that got 11 miles per gallon.
So wait, that was the new white one, right? And that thing only got 11?
How was that?
So part of that is that it was towing a trailer.
Right.
But yeah, it's not, wasn't the most fuel efficient thing.
It
had power.
But it had a lot, it was the hybrid. So
yeah.
It puts the same power out. It's like the same power output as like a supercharged 5.7 liter V8. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to drive. And maybe that's part of the problem of the fuel.
Probably. Also, it weighs a lot because of all that.
So we took the trailer off for one section of dunes. We did a dune section in Namibia by the Skeleton Coast. And that thing was a monster in that section. It was cool. It was so light. Everybody's bags were out. No trailer. It was like, I'm liberated.
Oh, yeah. You unhook the trailer and it's like... It's like going from the, I don't know if you ever played baseball or softball or anything, but you have the weights on the bat and you swing the bat with the weights on it and take the weights off. And then you're like, I have all this superpower strength, you know?
And then you ground out to second.
If you're lucky. In my case, it was just strike out. So we can just go like that. I just put like 700 something miles on a new Tundra TRD Pro.
Yeah.
So yeah, had the same experience. Like, I wasn't towing a trailer, and obviously, I wasn't doing low range in coastal Africa. But yeah, that thing is punchy.
Yeah.
Which was nice because all the extra power came with a bunch of extra weight, which is not nice. Speaking of Tundras, how has yours been?
Ours has been great. It gets the same fuel economy as a hybrid Sequoia. It has a house on the back. It's actually a little bit better. We're kind of like, we kind of hover around like 12 and a half miles per gallon.
Which, that is wild to me that they spent all this time and energy and money to develop a new powertrain to get the same fuel economy.
Yeah.
They said, just to be clear, Toyota said they developed this powertrain for power, not for fuel economy.
Cool. Cool.
Just putting it out there. Not to defend my homies, but that's word for word almost.
No, I accept more power. I have no problem with that.
Supercharger.
I think the thing with our Tundra is that we've had it for a while, not with the camper on it, but this experience has been like a trust building experience with it.
Yes.
You know, the little, like when we took our red truck to South America, I think you trusted it to a certain extent, but you gain trust over time. And so we're in like the trust building section of this trip with the vehicle.
I feel pretty good now. I think the biggest part was that, so I regeared it to 529, so it's got 529 gears in it now. And that helps. But the first set of gears didn't really go in well, and they were making noise on deceleration. As soon as I picked up the truck, and I was like, this is not good. We got to redo this. So then those got redone by another shop.
Well, they got redone twice.
Oh, sorry. Done
at the first.
Redone twice at the first shop, and then they still weren't right. So I was like, okay, if you can't do it two times, you likely won't be able to get it on a third try. So I went to another shop, and it sounded great, and everything was, they were working well. But then when we did the rear wheel bearings, like a preventative maintenance rear wheel bearings on the truck, now it has all the weight. We took the gear oil out, and it was just sparkly, just like a glitter bomb. And realized that the pinion bearing had not been, the preloader was a little bit off on that. So then when we were on our way south at that point, so we had Dark Horse Customs in Bozeman, Montana, redo it a third or fourth
time.
That was like, we delayed shipping at that point. We had it booked, and then we had to reschedule it. And it was,
I'm sure,
a
that
lot.
Steam so, yeah. line was very understanding.
No. For the little while, I was just constant. Like, I'm always very, I'm just constantly listening. What's making noise? Especially after that, I'm like, what's that noise? I'm like, oh, that's just the road.
It's just the road.
Change now. Oh, what's that? It's like asphalt, different, changed, or like tire pressure is a little bit different than what it was before.
I think the thing is too, we're not used to carrying around a shell on our back that is this house-like as well.
It's like a kindergartner wearing a full-size backpack.
Right. And
I have one of those right now. I completely got that reference.
And you're always like, what can we get out of this backpack? Like, what can we take out? What's the heaviest? Right. Can we get rid of this thermos, like, immediately? Mm-hmm. Doing that.
Yeah.
From the beginning. But
that's very, very understandable about being in the trust-building phase, especially after how many miles and how many adventures you've done with the red truck and with, you know, I know that feeling of like, that sound is not the right sound for this vehicle to make, like in your heart sinks. Do you think that you have gotten to the, like, and you're probably familiar with this, like the solidified relationship with a vehicle because you've done something above the normal confines of its existence?
It gets better every day.
I don't think so. Because in the UK, we hadn't done a lot of off-pavement driving. And so that's one test that needs to be done with it if we're going to take it to where we want to take it. So we've started doing that in Spain.
Yeah.
So it'll just
continue
to happen over time.
Yeah.
It's and better than it was.
Yeah. And it was fun because we didn't really do anything with this truck in Canada. We just put it together and left. So it's been nice to be able to make changes along the way and kind of like improve, like just suspension settings or like adjusting bump stops to make sure that things are, you know, sitting where they're supposed to sit and stuff. So it's good.
Kind of like still in the testing phase, but to be fair, it's been great.
And
the living space is amazing.
How has Yeah. How has living out of a tiny house tundra been?
It's been
so good.
It's been really good. We were hiking this morning and kind of talking about the show notes, and we're like, how long have we been in this thing? We've had a year already, and the time just flew by. So we probably spent 8 months in the truck itself, or
oh wow,
seven, 8 months in the camper. And yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to share what I think is an interior shot of your guys' camper.
That's, yeah, if it matches.
Is that about right? Honestly,
that's it. No, that's not it. That's not it. That's a different one. It's similar. So that's the HBE model, the side entry model. And I like that model a lot. I like it better. But it also weighs 350 pounds more than this one.
Which model was yours?
It's the Alpine.
But the dinette is very spacious. The bed's very comfortable. We have more storage than we need.
Yeah.
Well, that can always turn into a bad problem.
So I removed the rear pull-out drawer from the Mitz flatbed because it was 210 pounds. And I'm like,
The drawer itself was 210 pounds?
And it was still a light, like a pretty light setup otherwise.
Yeah. But they're just like huge drawer slides and all the pieces that make that work. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's the one. But yeah, and then so I limited space there, and then what else? Yeah, there's nothing really stored in the flatbed compartments. Just like that's where the garbage and recycling goes. So that mm-hmm. helps cut down weight. I removed the back seat out of the truck, and I put the spare tire in the back seat to remove 90 pounds off the really, really far back of the
hang it off the back. That's smart. Yep.
So that helps. Put a lithium starting battery from anti-gravity in the truck, and that saved 55 pounds.
Saved 55 pounds?
Yeah, it weighs 15, 17 pounds, something like that.
Oh my God.
Yeah, truck batteries are heavy, Ross.
Trust me, I know. I've held my fair share, but 55, if a normal battery is what, 70?
Yeah.
How much did you say the lithium weighs?
Yeah, if it's 15 or 16 pounds, it's light.
Crazy. Okay.
That's yeah. Crazy. And then
how
I just
close are you to payload with?
It kind of depends. So
because I put a 40, in most Tundra
I,
cases,
I put a 46 gallon. So the thing weighs like 7,800 pounds when not everything is in it. Mm-hmm. So it kind of hovers. But if I want to keep it light, we just don't bring a lot of water, and I don't fill the 46 gallon tank up all the way. And then if we want to be if we're going out a long distance, we just top up.
Okay.
And there's some stuff I think we've eliminated. Like we just keep eliminating things that we're realizing mm-hmm. we're not using.
Yeah.
But I'm also collecting a lot of books. And so those will be at some point. Those will, once I get those back to Canada, that it'll help with the weight quite a bit.
Yeah.
I look at my bookshelf, which is about 4 feet from my desk, every single day. And every single day I remember that my least favorite thing about moving is packing and moving books.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so but heavy. I can't get rid of them.
Yeah, no. You know? Super easy. You just start giving them to the kids. They ruin them.
My child pretends to read, but she just points at pictures and goes, Baba? And that's the whole reading entity at this point. So have you had any interesting, obviously, in Spain and in the UK and whatnot, a Tundra with a camper on the back is not the normal vehicle on the streets there. Had any interesting interactions from people who are like, the hell is that doing here?
A little bit of that. Most people are pumped and
very pumped.
Yeah. And they're just like, how did you get this here? A lot of people have asked, have we driven here? I'm like, I don't know what you mean by that.
From Canada. How'd you get, you drove?
I think they mean, did you ship it here and then whatever.
Yeah. Does it have Canadian plates on it?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's got Canadian flag on the back and a sticker that says CA or CAN. Just to show that it's a Canadian truck. But there are so many motorhomes around here, and it definitely stands out in a sea of the motorhomes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sure does.
There's our Canada
it was
sticker.
Cool too in,
that's it?
Yeah. In Scotland, a lot of people have relatives or friends that have moved to Canada or vice versa. And so there was always somebody like, my brother lives in Canada, or I've been to Canada, or my son has moved to Canada and married a Canadian woman. And so everybody had a story to tell there, which was cool.
Everybody loves Canada, but Canada's a really big place. Like, that doesn't matter. In Canada, that doesn't narrow it down.
Which is one of my favorite movie quotes of all time is from the movie Canadian Big, where they're like, Canada has amassed 90% of their population along our northern border. Yeah, because it's the least cold part, guys. Like, it's not like it's... Of course they do.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah.
It's true.
Oh. It is nice being in Spain where there are more Toyotas around, because we were in the land of Land Rovers for so long.
Which was like, fun was, also, but...
We were able to like get our foot in the, or Ashley at least was able to get her foot in the door in the Land Rover community, be invited out and do some stuff with them.
That's cool. I mean, it's shared. It's a community, you know, it's as funny as it is when people talk shit, you know, make to make, like the Jeep guys hit Toyota guys and all that stuff. Like ultimately everybody's in it for the same thing, and oh my god, the Tundra looks so much bigger than that.
Yes,
Defender. Oh my god, that's so funny.
It's just because we're parked closer to the camera.
Sure. Yeah.
Can't make that out on my screen.
It's funny because I am constantly just like, oh, the camper's too big, or the truck's too big, or whatever. But you know what? Every single night we spend with friends, everybody's in the camper and eating and drinking. And I'm like, okay, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like having a place that people can come to. And
because that's what happened to us when we were in our red truck in South America.
In the rooftop tent.
Yeah. In the rooftop tent, people would invite us over into their camper for dinner or drinks or whatever. And now we can have people over and it's so great.
And you've eclipsed that point of experience where you're not, you know, attending the parties, you're hosting the parties.
Yeah. So it's been good. And then if we spend enough time with people, they just start coming in without asking, and it's great. They're like, hey, by the way, they're like, it's cold outside, I'm coming in. I'm like, perfect. Come on in.
You're technically entering my house, but yes, come on in. Like,
yeah.
We have some neighbors like that. I understand when kids just walk in. Yeah.
I'm gonna leave that one alone.
It'll happen, Ross. Just she's got to get older. Yeah.
Fair enough. So, this is the Spain portion of your trip. Is a section of this trip. So, where, without spoiling anything or scooping yourselves, where's on the list of places to check off on this adventure?
Yeah. Okay, so we can only be in Europe-ish. So there's a collection of countries within the European Union that are part of the Schengen Agreement, and we can only spend 90 days out of 180 days in Schengen.
Okay.
So
in the Schengen countries, yeah.
Which includes all of the countries.
Not all, but a lot of them.
A lot of the countries.
Are you getting sent to like Estonia just to buy time?
We're going to go down to Morocco is the first one.
Okay.
But yes. So that's essentially it, is we're going to head.
Yep. Is it like you have to just leave and you can come back in, or you got to stay your allocated days? You can only be in
90 days out of 180 days. So
however you want to use them up, you can do it. So I think we'll just bulk time. Instead of like 2 weeks in, 2 weeks out, whatever, it's too confusing and blah, blah, blah. So we'll just do our 2.5 months or whatever here and then have that buffer just in case, and then head into Morocco and then see how far south we end up going. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not sure.
See what there a...
Yeah, probably not.
I was going to say, is there like a cheat code, like Luxembourg doesn't count, so you could just pop in there for a little bit? Like,
yeah.
There are also there. You can, or at least for us, there's some reciprocal agreements that some countries have with Canada. Like I know Spain, you're saying that Spain has a digital nomad visa. So if you make enough money remotely, you can stay, you can apply to stay in Spain for an extra 3 months.
That's
as long
different.
As you stay in Spain.
That's different than the reciprocal agreement.
Okay.
So if you're Canadian, you can apply to have an extra 3 months in Spain.
Okay.
Yeah.
On top of the time you've spent there already, I believe. And then the digital nomad visa is different, but
extra paperwork.
So we'll see what happens.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah. We're going home this Christmas because Ashley needs to get her driver's license renewed. And they won't, you can't, we have to actually go
you
in
can't
person.
Do that from afar.
And,
like, hey, we're in Europe now. Can you just go ahead and renew it?
Yeah, we're like, just use that same photo. They're like, I don't
know.
It's
not a thing.
So we got some. We're like, okay, let's go home and visit family and then, you know, do some paperwork and get a driver's license renewed and get international driver permits renewed because they only last a year. And yeah, go to the dentist and
go to the dentist.
Do some
eye doc.
All of that fun Canadian healthcare that we all dream about down here.
Oh, yeah.
We don't. We still have to pay for the dentist. Don't
still,
worry.
Like, it can't be nearly what I'm paying.
I don't know. I remember when I had a real job and I had benefits that covered it. Memories.
Yeah, that was good.
Good times.
Like,
it was great. I didn't know that. I didn't know how good it was at the time, to be honest.
Right.
It was great. So yeah,
I could host a seminar on fucked up healthcare.
our running joke lately has been if Canada would just buy one of the Caribbean islands and just get install all of the stuff down there, we just move there. Because I feel like Canada would handle hurricanes better than everyone else, and then we just deal with normal healthcare from Canada. Then, like, get on board with that.
Although with the way climate change is going, there is a chance in our lifetimes that we just go
to Toronto. It's part of South.
And it'll be tropically warm. Yep. Hey, I've seen The Day After Tomorrow. I know what can happen.
And then we saw New York, what, like 3 weeks ago, look like The Day After Tomorrow? Like,
oh, God.
The flooding
they
had.
8.8 inches of rain over like 4 or 5 hours or something. It was crazy. And I got that here in Connecticut, too, but because that's, you know, not New York, nobody talks about it. And meanwhile, I'm like, snorkels? Does anybody consider snorkels for the streets around here?
Does the Lexus have a snorkel?
Negative.
Oh, okay. I was like, I don't remember a snorkel. I felt like I just looked at pictures.
No, I drove the Alpina XB7 through it, which was a joy.
Like a ridge of faith.
Yeah. Yeah. Filed under not my car.
How do you explain that one to Alpina? Sorry, guys.
So
it got flooded.
Oh, I didn't have to.
Okay.
Honestly, it did great. It did great. So let's take this not my car tangent and run with it. How was your trip to Iceland? And yeah, why don't you tell us about that? Tell us about that whole thing, because I think a lot of people have only like seen the YouTubes and probably want to hear more.
And I think the best thing about, well, I feel like I'm never in those shows because I'm always behind the camera.
You were in this one. You were in this one.
Yeah. You want to?
Yeah. Okay. So this was last September, wasn't it?
July and
August.
A little
more than a year ago that we were in Iceland. And so Richard did the first section of the Nordic series. And then I joined in for the Iceland portion of the Exoverland series. And it was really fun coming in towards the end. So I was in the last 3 weeks, and Iceland was definitely like a different, it felt like a different trip. I wasn't there on the first one, but it felt like a different trip just generally.
100%. Yeah.
Wow. Iceland really blew my mind. And that was the first trip that I got put into the navigator and planning role, which I loved. I loved it. I got to do so much research before I left and pick out all these spots and talked with Torvi, who owns that Hilux there, ahead of time. And man, yeah, just it's one of my favorite places I think we've ever been to. Just everything about it, I just loved. And yeah,
it felt wild.
Felt really wild and raw and new and old, and people were nice. Food was interesting, like in a good way. And yeah, everything had geothermal heating, so it's like warm floors and mm-hmm. yeah, hot springs, like what's not to love, you know. Yeah, and the weather was pretty good while we were there too, which we got really, I think, lucky. Yeah, and those river crossings, so I did lots of driving too and cooking. And yeah, I don't know what else.
So yeah, just to set the stage, this was the Expedition Overland. What was it? What was the, in the Nordic?
The Nordic series? Yeah.
So collection of Toyota 4x4s and the XO crew and the two of you. And plus this guy Torvi in Iceland. And so the question I wanted to ask was, A, did Iceland and the adventures that you had planned live up to your own expectations? And B, do you feel like you left stuff on the table?
Ooh, always. Yeah. So first question, yes. So planning it, I was extremely excited and I loved planning it. And then actually most of the things, if not all the things that I saw on the internet or whatever, and we got there in real life, it was better. Like the scenery was better. Oh, that's awesome. It felt better. It looked better. Yeah, it was, every single day was just different landscapes and different things happening and beautiful scenery. And it definitely was higher than my expectations, for sure, which was awesome. Some of the camps that we stayed at, like there was some fuzzy picture on the internet or something. I'm like, I think this looks good. We should probably stay here. And then we like crest a hill and I'm like, oh my goodness. It was so stunning. So yeah, definitely. Yeah. And then yes, we left stuff on the table for sure. We didn't cover the western part of the country hardly at all, like the fjords over there on that side.
And we hit a lot of the F roads,
like the center,
but we still left a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we have not spent any time there in the winter yet.
Yeah.
Different.
Yeah.
There's a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But well, that's like, good
to hear. I'd love to go back.
The thing that's super cool about the way they build their trucks is they build them, A, for the F roads, the mountain roads, but B, that, and like they're very, they have restrictions in place that you cannot drive off road because, mm-hmm. you know, you drive off road and those tracks stay there for decades.
Yeah. Kills the habitat and
yeah, all the rest of it. But when there's enough snow cover on the ground, you can drive wherever you want because you're not disturbing that habitat anymore. Mm-hmm. So everybody runs between 40s and 46s on whatever they have and air down to a couple pounds, and you can drive on the glacier, you can drive wherever you want, safely. And
don't make us rescue you and you're good.
Yeah. So I don't know. Sounds like there's a lot of fun to be had out there.
That's for sure. The tundra would look pretty cool on 42s.
Yeah, we went to Arctic trucks and there was a tundra on 44s and I was like, yeah, this is pretty cool.
But just like the maintenance I would have to go on to deal with that is hurting my soul. But
I'm surprised that they're able to they're able to make these trucks live like F-150s on 46s but you know, I think it's just driving style and
knowledge the terrain and diligent maintenance versus dude down in Texas puts, you know, 50 on his F-150, changes the oil every 12,000 miles. Like, why's my engine messed up? Like, well, there's this thing called taking care of it. <You know?
laughs> yeah. And I've never been anywhere where, they have such expensive fuel and yet they have tires are so large at the same time.
Right.
Like I think gas, regular gas was 10 or 11 bucks a gallon when we were there. Whoa. And everybody's running around town on 44s.
Right.
40s.
Yeah, I think I would love to go back, but I think that's one of the things that's challenging is it's expensive to get your vehicle there. It's expensive to rent a vehicle there. And you know, fuel's expensive. Groceries are expensive. I think you can do it sort of on a budget, but it's not an inexpensive destination. So
It was really nice to be invited on that trip because
we wouldn't have been able to go, I don't think.
Not in the short term.
Yeah.
So yeah, real pleasure.
How was that trip?
It was great. Yeah.
It was great.
It's always fun when I get to go do work I like to do, get paid well for it, and then tell a fun story while seeing, you know, a bunch of landscape that I would never have seen before, or eat food I would never have been able to eat, and experience new things.
And be a part of a group. We talked about that too this year.
Yeah.
Is we're always, it's the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And the group dynamic is totally different when you have a crew all working towards a goal, and we're always around each other for weeks and weeks on end. And it's just, we do a lot of things that we wouldn't normally take the time to do, like build a fire and, you know, things like that, couple we should do because it's nice, but we just don't.
It's more complex, but at the same time, it's worth the complexity.
Rewarding.
Yeah. The work makes it worth it. Because having more people in your group is more work. I mean, I've off-roaded with two people, and I've off-roaded in a group of like 16 trucks. It's like, oh my God, this is terrible. But at the end of the day, it's like all these people saw the same thing, did the same thing. There's this, you know, this like wholesome emotion behind everything. And it sounds like you got that a little bit too, because you attended this Africa trip as well. How did that come to be?
So Ash planned the Iceland portion of the Nordic series. And
with wonderful help.
Yes, from all of the people that you talked to. And
yeah.
Yeah.
It's not just me, that's for sure. Yeah, lots of people.
And I think as soon as you did that, you showed Clay that you understand what the point of the trip is. And the point of the trip is to film a series, not to go and see whatever, if it's not, or go up this mountain if it's actually not going to be scenic, or not to go here because it's going to be fun. You have to go here because it's fun and it's going to help tell a story. And once you proved that you understood the concept of what needed to be done, I think, and like Clay was like, yeah, you're coming to Africa with us and for the whole trip. So
whole trip.
And that was a beast.
That was 2 months. Yeah. 8 weeks. And there were eight of us. So it was Clay Croft.
Does it say all Michelle the boys were there, Croft, right? Yeah.
And their three kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Sai's the eldest. And he's 8.
I know they have two with 18, driver's permit.
Sorry.
That's how I do my math.
He's driving.
Yeah.
Right.
He's driving.
Yes.
Yeah, nice. Water's 15.
Like, and where are my kids in relation to this?
Right. Eli's 13. And then we had Peter Van Straelen was there as well.
He was on the Iceland trip as well.
Yep.
And he's 21.
And then for the first half, we had Dr. John Solberg, who has been on previous episodes. It was really nice to have a doctor there. And
take some pressure off.
Having Dr. John there was great. And then he flew out, and then another person flew in that we cannot say for the second half.
That's correct.
Name.
Say, you can guess, and they'll just sit straight-faced.
Does he have something to do with Land Cruiser?
No, it wasn't Kurt.
Oh, I'm completely wrong then.
Because Kurt, like Kurt was at the launch of the new Land Cruiser.
Yes, so, right. Yes. I was messaging Kurt that week, and he was like, "Dude, I'm a little busy now." I was like, "Oh shit!" Like, I didn't realize they were hosting the unveil.
Yeah.
Ooh, oopsies.
Yeah. Yeah, he was like,
I should message
him. He's still busy.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think he slows down. He only gets busier.
He's on. Yeah, that dude.
Did I forget anybody?
No, I think that was
it. That was it.
Yeah, so it was great. And then thankfully they keep getting invited back to hold a camera of some sort. So I got to be lead photographer for the trip, and then also shot all half the film. So
cool.
We're very busy.
Yeah. And also I'm also data management, so backing up all the data every day. Yeah. Now when I start saying
how many terabytes did you end up with?
And okay,
five. Oh my
20,
gosh.
28,
I think.
So many.
Jesus.
So many. Every night I'm just like type, copy. And it's a lot. God. Usually,
so you didn't have to make
half a terabyte a day. I did not. I barely had time to eat dinner, but thankfully somebody else actually made dinner alone.
Yeah, Rochelle and I, with some help.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, those trips
are a lot.
They're a lot. It's a lot. Really fun being able to just drill down and just have a couple of roles within a team. Because normally two of us split all of the roles here. And it's pretty fun just to have one or two roles that we have to focus on. Yeah.
Turns into
a team that is capable of doing everything
else. I'm gonna redirect you, Ross. Sorry.
So
like, because it is just the two of you, and more often than not, you're out in the middle of nowhere. Do you plan meals? How far ahead do you plan meals? Okay.
Like 2 or 3 days, maybe.
Yeah.
Because we haven't been in a situation yet where we've been out for a really long time away from grocery stores yet, have we?
No, I think like on that northwest coast of Scotland, we were kind of just away from.
We were out there for a while, actually, yeah. And then maybe after 2 or 3 days, we start just putting together whatever we have.
Yeah.
But I think once we get into Morocco and some of the longer stretches, we'll maybe have to, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see how
I feel like
goes.
We get a good 5 or 6 days of good fresh food. We have a 55 liter fridge. So I feel like we get a good 5, 6 days of good fresh food. And then we start cobbling things together with whatever is left. But
the food culture in Spain is like a whole amazing thing. Yeah. So we haven't been in want of anything.
So we went out for coffee, or we went for breakfast the other day. We each had a cappuccino or a cafe con leche. We had fresh squeezed orange juice, and we had toast with jam and butter, and we had maybe a second coffee. And it was €8.50. So €8.50 US, more or less.
Okay. And that's effectively a full meal for two people for $8.
Yeah.
Which is a single Starbucks in
New York City. Here in Kansas, you can still
totally.
Get one.
Exactly. So
the price culture. Don't change.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Especially if it's
here's your
oatmeal.
Especially if you add a third shot and a flavor. Yeah, $8 pretty quick.
Delicious.
You speak from experience? I hope not. That's disgusting.
That might be my regular order. And when you have a reward star, you add the fourth shot. Because it's free.
It's free.
That's how I get back to normal. Yeah.
Intestinal. That's intestinal masochism.
Do you know how much energy is around me and how little energy I have? That is how I can keep up.
That's how.
A valid point.
To be honest, that's kind of how I felt on the Africa trip.
Really?
So much energy around me. Just depleting from my body.
Namibia?
Botswana and South Africa.
Okay. How were the border crossings?
Were they? Okay.
Very, very easy.
Really?
Yeah. We had carnets for the trucks because you need a carnet to get into South Africa.
If you're shipping.
If you're shipping. So... it made it very easy when you go through a border crossing, then it's like stamp it and fill it out.
You have to double check that it's filled out correctly.
Which it wasn't always.
But otherwise it was.
Was it cold it was while easy. You guys were down there?
Super easy.
Cool.
It was sick because it was the reverse, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was their winter. It snowed in Johannesburg.
Which is nuts to think about it snowing in Africa. But yeah.
Oh, wow. So,
Yeah, so we had but a few times when it dipped to freezing, and then a lot of the time it hovered like mid-80s.
Thank you for translating
American
for us.
Speak.
Johannesburg, for those Canadians listening, are good at 5,700 feet, which...
Yeah, it's high.
That'll make snow that much more... Like, that less unlikely. Something like that. It's like Denver.
It was crazy. Like, coming into Joburg and then doing the route and then coming back to Joburg, and the temperature was warmer, and we're like, we just left here, but it had been 8 weeks, and just coming back in again was weird.
Yeah
it's interesting. It's pretty
cool. Like, it's warmer now here. Weird. Like, quite a bit warmer.
Yeah,
so it shows you, like, the passage of time is so weird there when you are out on the road,
especially when the 8 weeks just flies by.
Yeah,
as it does. On time, there's a different relationship with time when you're on any trip away from your, not necessarily permanent, but for the two of you, your most frequent dwelling.
Yeah.
You know, and interesting to hear that that is the same when traveling very much.
Yeah, you lose track of, you're like, how long has it been since I had a shower or done laundry? And it's always... longer, or groceries, it's always longer than we think it is. We're like, why don't we have any food left? And it's like, well, it's actually been
swing by the store. Like,
is
weird.
Is there when you're on the road like that, is there, aside from in certain vicinities, traffic and events and whatnot, is there any like differentiation between weekends and weekdays? All kind of meshes together.
No.
That's
We'll flip them around. So, like, during the week, if we need to do something, then I will take the day off.
This is for like us.
Us. Okay. I'll take the day off, but then I'll work on a Sunday or something. It's just all over,
especially
the place.
If we're somewhere that's popular and we can beat the crowds by not being there on a weekend, we'll just work during the week. And
that's all. That's a pro tip, regardless of where you're going.
Yeah.
Go in the morning on a weekday.
Yep.
But it also sometimes we'll get tripped up because we sometimes are like, we should actually take a weekend. Because some days I'll be like working every single day.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I should probably take like a day off.
Yeah. We do a pretty, I think we do a decent job of splitting the hours equally. Throughout all 7 days of the week.
Yeah.
But that's all that matters. Yeah. Like,
we were able to go for a hike this morning, but then just do work.
And you guys aren't losing your mind. So we're good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And through the power of Starlink, we can talk to you and we can do work whenever.
And,
doesn't matter where we are.
And you made the comment, like, you really have had pretty reliable connections the whole time you've been there. That's so wild.
Yeah.
Totally.
Probably have more reliable, better connections than I have in my house with Optimum. What a friggin' nightmare. Stupid internet is. I'm not joking. It's like four times a day, it either slows down or just quits. I'm like,
come hang out in the Midwest with our Google Fiber, dude.
Ooh. Magic.
Yeah, my wife is going to love that proposition. I'm going to the Midwest.
When you show her the size of house, you can then purchase as well. Yes, it will change some things.
Oh, Chris, we have talked about this. This horse has been
right, but it's always funny to me.
You know that. It's funny to you, and it's funny to your wife.
We're well
she's
aware
from
of your situation
where I am. So. Anyways,
no, I like this off topic.
Just staying on topic. I don't. Can you or do you want to reveal any of your like snapshot highlights of your trip thus far, the one you're on, or the Africa trip. I don't know if you have, you know, disclosures you have to obey or anything, but.
Yeah, I feel like general things are good.
Yeah, I
for Africa, but
so for Africa, I'll just say that
8 weeks it was a blur.
Like, you know, when you just work
caffeinated, 8 week blur.
Yeah, you wake up at 7 in the morning, you work all day, and you run around, you see a whole bunch of stuff, and I mostly just saw stuff through a camera lens or through a monitor, and then I'm offloading photos until 11 o'clock at night, and then I go to sleep and video, and then go to sleep and do the next day. And
maybe not even
at some point, like the energy level is just enough to keep me alive and get me to like do my tasks every day, and just things come in and they just like sit here and they're. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was a great trip, and it was so fun to do it as a big group. Mm-hmm. And we had people come in, like a couple people from South Africa join us as well with their own trucks and actually teach us some things about their culture. And
okay, that's pretty cool.
As opposed to just like assuming things from our eyes. So it was really nice.
That was awesome.
That was, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a really fun part about the trip.
And just the wildlife component was so different. Just having to be on your toes all the time, kind of like in camp at night, for example, always like looking with a flashlight in the bushes to make sure there's not something out there.
Yeah, always hearing the hippos
something
and the hyenas.
Always watching. It's just whether it's deciding to do something about it.
Right. Yeah. So that's like another level of heightened awareness that we kind of had to have that we weren't necessarily used to.
Black bears are one thing.
Yeah.
Brown
bears
extent,
are another thing.
Let's say.
African wildlife is an entirely different thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And we had come from months in Scotland where the biggest mammal that might do something to you is a badger. And not a honey badger, like a badger.
No, it's a human. Let's be real.
Yeah, human. I was thinking that too, actually. Yeah.
But
yeah,
we went for months without worrying about anything. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden we're like, okay, we get malaria. We get attacked by a lion. Cool. Yeah.
Well, like matter the ants are biters down there. Like that's.
Be vigilant is the.
Yeah.
That's where it gets me. Like.
But generally it was great. Didn't have to. Nobody got attacked.
I think he was asking about highlights.
We'll definitely put that in the program.
I think.
I mean, nobody getting attacked is a highlight.
Yeah. And I think for our trip, I think one thing I wasn't expecting, like here but when we were in the UK, Ashley has this project called Finding Barbara Toy. And I think you should maybe you want to tell everybody about this.
Yeah, give us the elevator pitch on that one.
It's super cool. And at first I'm like, I care a little bit because it's interesting. But then as we're going to the Library of Scotland and finding these documents, and as you're driving her Sierra Leone Land Rover that she drove around the world, I'm like, this is the coolest thing. It's just like such a fun project.
Yeah, so elevator pitch. I can't remember if I was talking to you guys about this last time we spoke, but whatever. So there's this woman named Barbara Toy, and she drove her Series 1 Land Rover around the world, and she had a couple of Land Rovers, but she circumnavigated the globe a couple of times and did a bunch of travels and wrote 8 books, and she started traveling on her own in Land Rovers in like the 50s and 60s and 70s. And
when she started, when she was 40, I think.
Yeah. And so apparently the story goes, she was in a pub in, I guess it was probably, I think London, and with a group of friends, and a bet was made. And, you know, a little while later she had a demonstration model Land Rover that she took to Afghanistan. And that was like the start of this whole travel bug for her, and writing and taking photos and everything.
Crazy.
So I initially found out about her during COVID when I was investigating a lot of women's historical overland stories, which I still am doing
for
Overland Journal and Expedition Portal. So but hers has been
shit. You gotta make sure, because
I know
are stories that people thought that our audience are, if not familiar with, then should be, and that they're like important historical things to hear, and you know, they're great stories. So
they're amazing. Like, things were so hard, way harder back then. And those are, they've all become kind of my idols, I think. Yeah. Anyway, so Barbara Toy, I was particularly intrigued with her story because she had written these 8 books, but like, you couldn't really buy them other than really expensive used copies online. Mm-hmm. So none of them were in print. And I was like, how is it that there was this woman traveling the globe on her own in a Land Rover? She wrote 8 books and, you know, had this relationship with Land Rover and was in the Royal Geographical Society. And nobody's talking about her except for super, super, super niche Land Rover Series 1 fans. Mm-hmm. And none of her books are available to read unless you want to spend a bunch of money.
What?
Like hundreds of pounds.
Up to 1,000.
Yeah, up to 1,000 pounds on the original books that she had written. That's and crazy. None of them, you can't get them at, like, in electronic copies. And anyways, so this Finding Barbara Toy project was kind of born out of that, in that I wanted to, first of all, collect all the copies of her books if I could find them. And then originals would be preferred. And then the second part of the project was to try to get the books back into print so people can actually buy them and actually read her stories. Mm. And so, yeah, it's kind of a long story. But in the UK, I just kept going to bookshops and I thought, let's do this the old-fashioned way and go on foot. And I actually ended up finding 2. Originals copies, yeah, and one reprint, but still in pretty good shape. So that was very exciting, and to see the books in person and to be in the actual place where you could actually buy them, and like, the, I don't know, it's like an old school kind of quest that's kind of fun. You're not just like ordering off them internet for hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
Are those the books that were alluded to earlier? Sorry to interrupt you. Is this the book collection that was alluded to earlier on? That they're living with you and they have to make their way back home? Yeah.
Yeah. So that, and those and some other books that I was like, I found some books that I probably couldn't get in Canada, like Ella Mailart, who was a Swiss overland traveler and journalist, and Freya Stark, and who else is in there?
Do you have one of Antonia's books in there?
Antonia Bolingbroke Kent, she's like a modern writer.
Do you have Lois's?
And Lois Price's book, and yeah, anyways, I've been collecting a bunch of them.
But speaking of Lois.
Okay, yeah. So it's a long story, but there's a guy named Greg Fitzgerald, and he's a Land Rover enthusiast, and he writes all about Land Rovers, and he found me on Instagram, and we worked together to try to get one of Barbara Toy's books reprinted. And awesome. So fast forward to, I think it was April, and I think just as we like touched down in London, and I turned my phone on, and I got the news that John Marie Publishing, which actually published her original books, was game to reprint In Search of Sheba.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And so how this came about was I had reached out to Lois about a copyright lawyer in the UK because I didn't know what the rules are about reprinting books like this. Mm-hmm. And she ended up hooking me up with another author named Nick. And he actually was in charge of this historical series with John Murray Publishing. And he was like, yeah, let's do this. And he was really stoked about the concept of getting her book back in print. So yay. So now people can actually buy it, and I'll give you the link if anybody is interested, any listeners are interested in buying a copy of Barbara Toy's book. I'll fire it over to you guys. So the more people that are interested, the more likely that some of the other books will be able to be reprinted, I imagine, as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then I ended up going to Barbara Toy's... it wasn't really her hometown, but she spent a lot of time in Chipping Norton in the UK and walked by her old house and did stalkery things like that. But through the power of Instagram, which is proving to be very helpful on my quest, I got hooked up with the current owner of Pollyanna, which is Barbara's first Land Rover that she took on the first few trips that she did. And the Land Rover's name is Pollyanna, and it still runs. And so Tom Pickford is the man who owns Pollyanna, and he was very generous and kind and invited me over to check out Pollyanna and even let me behind the wheel. So I got to, like, sit in this vehicle that this woman drove from all these trips, and it was a weird... surreal moment. Yeah. So I haven't posted about it yet on Instagram, but yeah,
that's so cool.
I will be soon, so I'll put some photos and stuff up about it, but that was pretty exciting.
Yeah,
there's a whole bunch of other details about all of that that I need to get down somewhere. I guess she sent the vehicle there after Land Rover shut down their service department in the, was it Solihull? 90s or 80s, yeah, or something at Solihull, and so Land Rover recommended that she contact a local Land Rover mechanic, which was Tom, who currently owns Land Rover, his dad.
What?
And so Tom actually learned to drive on Pollyanna, like in Pollyanna. Very cool. And he like met her before she passed away in 2001, I think it was, and so it was very amazing and weird and surreal to be there with him chatting about her. And yeah. And then the Scottish Library, sorry, I'm like going on and on, was just going through the files that the publisher owned for each book. So it was like files for each book that have been archived in the Scottish Library. And in those files are letters between Barbara Toy and her principal contact. And they're all like handwritten and had like embossment from like hotels all over the world where she was, and her signature and like her real thoughts on everything. And so that was one of the coolest moments I think I've had so far, was being in Scotland at an archive, getting a special card, and then like seeing these letters that she had actually handwritten from all over the world. That was like, oh, this is actually that's Barbara, awesome. You know, this is like a book she's written. This is herself. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, it's fun reading. Yeah. We started reading them really like very slowly. And then all of a sudden the library was starting to close. We're like, okay, take pictures of everything.
Yeah, this is like hundreds and hundreds of pictures.
But there are letters when she's writing back to John Murray, and she's like, oh, did you send my films to Sir David Attenborough? And did he like them?
Oh my
and
God.
And back, it's like, well, David Attenborough, he said he didn't really see the story or the films weren't good enough. And she's like, oh, okay. And, but it's so neat to see these letters back and forth. And...
wow. Yeah. So yeah, full on stalker mode, but it's been such a fun ride. And I'm always like, Barbara, where is she sending me today? Like, it's always an adventure mm-hmm. on the next quest for whatever.
It's like the scavenger hunt of scavenger hunts.
Did you have your own version of National Treasure / Uncharted / all that stuff? Like, it's, you get your own quest.
Cool.
That's
awesome. Oh. You deserve a sense of accomplishment on that one if you haven't. Because sometimes you do these big things and you don't give yourself time to actually like appreciate it and
flex. That's what Morocco's for.
Try to
have plenty of
time
down
there. Try to do that. Because this is
it's going
to
be rocky and dusty. Like, you know what you're getting into.
Thank you.
That's one. Yeah. 90 days. Yeah.
That didn't feel long at all.
Yeah.
So good.
Thanks for
listening to my long story. That was a
really good story.
Story.
Yeah.
It, seriously, we're here for that. That's what our show's about.
Seriously. Yeah, everybody wants to hear it long form in some way or another now.
Yeah, I almost need like on the Overland Journal podcast to just do one episode on Barbara Toy and the whole thing. And there's also a woman that lives in Chipping Norton, and she has a lot of Barbara Toy's belongings that were given to her. So like tons of photographs and dresses and maps.
Oh, that's awesome.
And
film.
And she's in the midst of writing her biography. So I'm very excited to read that.
That could be
when that comes out.
An Overland Journal special.
Mm.
Starting, yeah.
I'd listen to that too.
Yeah.
There's an idea.
It's fun. Yeah.
Same. I know. Another addition to the world podcast.
Well, sweet. So, I'm gonna wrap up this show real fast.
Does become.
So because that,
that's great. Yeah.
Yeah, and my person who was supposedly taking her nap is now in the room with me. So that's why
I can listen to those stories all day.
I'm
really I don't know
about my time. I was like, well, there's the rest of the day. But still. Give me one second. You want to say hi? I'm gonna say hi. No, you don't want to come. You got to come over here to say hi. You want to say hi to Richard and Ashley? Say hi. You're just gonna. We do have nap hair involved, so we'll warn you now. It's definitely nap hair. Yeah.
Hello. Oh,
nap hair. Care.
Can you let me finish this?
I always have nap hair.
Hi. So, thanks for joining us.
Chris is like, well, nap time's over. I must play. it's work hours. Oh, man. So what is on the immediate docket other than Morocco? Anything you want to just tease?
So mostly Spain.
Yeah.
There's a lot to see here, so we'll have to maximize our time. I still am not sure which way we're going. Even tomorrow, we haven't really decided yet.
It's east or west.
So, yeah.
Follow the
like, point. Yeah. And, but yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's east, maybe.
Yeah, the weather's supposed to be bad in the west, so we're like,
yeah. And then, yeah, we are filming everything. Well, not everything, but a lot of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
4 episodes in to a series that's going to go on the X Overland Network. Nice. So they have a bunch of different creators that are doing stuff, so... we're filming a series.
Yeah.
For Norris, filming a series. Dirt, Gone Dirtin's filming a series.
Mm-hmm.
On cooking and food.
Hmm.
And then so Roam good. Overlanding, and then We Will Roam. So there are at least 5 or 6 of us who are filming different series that will probably go live in early 2024, around the same time as the. I'm guessing that. I actually don't know. Around the same time as the Africa.
That's
series
literally
goes live.
Wow,
that's literally all I can do.
So, man,
he's so fast with the keyboard.
Amazing.
He's a wizard. He's a production wizard.
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
You're a master of that. We'll give you that. That's cool though. Yeah, XO has begun to really spread its wings, and excited to see what comes in the coming months and years.
Yeah, they have a lot going on right now.
I'll wrap it up real fast. Mm-hmm. You can rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts. You can like and subscribe on YouTube.
Yeah.
You can follow Richard and Ashley. It's at Dusk to Glory. And then Ashley is at Dusk to Glory _ Ash. And then... mm-hmm. No, I didn't know that one. Is that what it's on Instagram?
Yeah, and at Finding Barbara Toy. Oh, sorry if you're going to say that.
Was that part of one of those posts?
Yeah.
You just had it up on the screen.
Oh, I got to go back and figure that out now. I'll dig into that.
Maybe a collaborative post.
Yeah, it was a collab.
Oh, I found it. I'm going to follow it. I got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like seeing that stuff.
There.
Yay, thank you.